You're on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara. Welcome to Radio Causeway. I'm Pav.
I'm Tim. This is your weekly showcase, bringing you timely interviews and bridging your world of music. UC Santa Barbara is participating in an ambitious $122 million Department of Energy project with the goal of developing a cost-effective method of generating energy from sunlight by mimicking photosynthesis. Today we are joined by Dr. Eric McFarland, professor at UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemical Engineering, to discuss the artificial synthesis project.
And we've got Jens Leckman and Blue Cranes later in the hour. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Welcome back. It's KCSB 91.9 FM Santa Barbara. This is Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
And I'm Pav.
Sounded like a question.
It often is.
Well, today we have a great show lined up for you. We have with us Dr. Eric McFarland, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering. He'll be leading the UCSB team working on the artificial synthesis project. Good morning, Dr. McFarland. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So I wanted to start off with kind of a basic building block question for people like myself that hasn't looked at a photosynthesis lecture in a while. What exactly is photosynthesis as nature has developed it?
Well, natural photosynthesis is something that happens every day, of course, and it's the process of building biomass from carbon dioxide and water using the sun's energy to drive this reaction that would otherwise require some other kind of energy input. The basic process is any kind of chemical that you can take from one say low energy state to a higher energy state, such as food, and using the sunlight to push that reaction forward, you can build a number of things, including trees and forests and so forth, but also chemicals that one might use for fuel.
So going from there, what is the artificial synthesis project? How does that work exactly?
Well, actually, the project is really a project to develop systems for artificial photosynthesis. So photosynthesis is the use of the photons from the sun to perform the synthetic reactions to build molecules. And so the solar fuels hub, which UCSB is a part of, is a large project that will bring together people working on a number of different elements of the chemical processes that go on in leaves and plants, and bring them into a artificial device that will mimic in many ways what happens in a plant. In a plant, the sunlight enters the plant. It's absorbed in pigment molecules, which the things that we look at when we see plants are colored. And those color centers absorb the light. They generate electronic charges, and those charges go through a number of chemical path or electronic pathways, and ultimately show up as reduced molecules such as carbohydrates, sugars, and the like, as well as oxygen, which is what we breathe.
So, in terms of your model, just to maybe clarify, you'll be producing something like synthetic pigments?
No, we'll be actually producing chemicals that one could use for fuels. One specific target would be to make hydrogen gas as a possible fuel molecule produced from water. And whereas plants take light, sunlight, and make oxygen and biomass, we'll take light and take a water molecule and break it into hydrogen on the one hand and possibly oxygen on the other. So our project will be to build the components of this system, both the absorber for the light, the electronic pathways where we can take the charges and build molecules, and then put this into a system that will allow us to make chemicals that we can make use of in society as fuels.
So you mentioned the hubs, and the UCSB is just one of six, I believe, California research institutes that are involved with the project. I guess it's being called the Joint Center for Artificial Photosynthesis, or JCAP, the collaboration. Specifically, what's your role and UCSB's role compared to some of the other institutes, if you actually know if they've developed and defined their roles as much?
Well, in some ways, the hub is just as it's called. There is a center of activities which will be physically located at both Caltech and Berkeley. The hub participants work really out of that center, connected either directly by driving their car to Pasadena or Berkeley, or alternatively by connecting electronically through a number of means that we have of communicating with one another. The physical activities will occur, though, at the hub center, and UCSB will participate by bringing components of the technology to the center of the hub. In particular, the role that our participants will play is in developing what are called high-throughput experimental methods to help in the development of these system components. For example, two of the critical components to make this work are having light absorbers that are made from inexpensive, earth-abundant, non-toxic materials that will absorb the light and produce the electronic charges that we need. UCSB will be involved in designing systems and machines, if you will, that will create these experimental absorbers in large numbers. For example, our goal is to make 1 million new absorbers per day, wow. Screen them for performance, and try to identify which ones might be suitable candidates. This activity in artificial photosynthesis has been going on for more than 100 years, and to date, we really have not accomplished nearly what we need to make this work. And part of the charge by the Secretary of Energy, Steve Chu, is to aggressively work with well-funded, well-equipped centers through multidisciplinary action to bring together the many talents that would be needed to do this very aggressively and overcome a lot of the barriers that have been built by trying to do this in one lab or another, sort of independently.
You mentioned the how long this has been a goal worldwide, really. What are some of the hurdles that researchers have run into in the past?
Well, in some ways, the basic research is already known. We know how to do artificial photosynthesis. We understand photosynthesis at a high level of sophistication. You're trying to make a fuel, which is the least expensive of all molecules, and you're trying to make it cheaply enough to not break the bank. And so the real challenge is to make an inexpensive artificial photosynthesis system, not to make one at all. It's been made by many people in the past. None of those are cost effective, so they can't make fuel cheap enough. So this, our solar fuels hub, is really focused on making it a cost-effective system, doing what other people have done, standing on their shoulders, if you will, and trying to build an integrated system that can be manufactured and to produce fuel at a cost that is significantly less than present systems.
I have a question, in fact, about cost. But before I get to that, maybe to ask you, to help us imagine what kind of form would this energy take? Is it? I mean, you mentioned hydrogen. Is it gaseous? Is it liquid? Are we thinking about it in traditional forms of electricity, or multiple forms?
In some ways, I'm personally a bit agnostic about that. I'm willing to take any low value, high accessibility chemical and make it into a higher value chemical using sunlight if it can be done cost effectively. One of the nice things about hydrogen is that it's relatively easy to separate from other things other than oxygen. It will be a gas. It would bubble out of a liquid environment, so you can capture it. The problem with hydrogen is storing it and transporting it. Mm-hmm. So hydrogen has challenges. You can react hydrogen with, for example, carbon dioxide and make methane, which you could put into a natural gas pipeline. So that would be a way of managing it once you made the hydrogen. But the critical step that is yet to be shown is that you can take something that's available, such as water or carbon dioxide or, you know, some kind of low-value feedstock, and convert it using sunlight into any kind of fuel. That's never been done cost-effectively before. So we'll choose hydrogen as one of our targets. On the other hand, if we could make CO2 into methane, or CO2 into methanol, or CO2 into formic acid, a variety of other chemicals would also be acceptable. Our objective is to efficiently capture the sunlight, make use of the electrochemical potential of that captured sunlight, and make a transformation of some inexpensive non-fuel feedstock into a fuel product. And doing that with a cost-effective system would be a real home run.
Well, if you're just joining us, tuning in, you're on Radio Causeway, and we are in the studio today with Dr. Eric McFarland, professor at UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemical Engineering. He's talking about the new $122 million Department of Energy project looking at artificial photosynthesis. If you have a question about the topic, feel free to call in when the music's playing. The number here in studio is 805-893-2424, and we're going to take a quick song break and be back talking about more about the project, what the difference is between what they're doing and the current solar cell technology, and many other questions. The song we got queued up right now is from, the song is Dream City. It's from Free Energy. You're on Radio Causeway.
You're listening to Radio Causeway with Pav and Tim on KCSB 91.9 FM Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara Radio KCSB 91.9 FM をお聞きの皆様、いつもありがとうございます。Pav と Tim の Radio Causeway は毎週火曜日午前9時からの放送です。お楽しみに。
That was Free Energy with Dream City. If you're just joining us, this is Radio Causeway. I'm Tim.
This is Pav.
And we are in studio with Dr. Eric McFarland, professor at UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemical Engineering, discussing the $122 million Department of Energy project to develop artificial photosynthesis.
So to continue our conversation, it's not exactly free energy, but the goal is low cost, efficiency. Can you give us a sense of, in terms of scale, compared to maybe like solar power, or even as you were talking about methane as a possible end product for this technology, how that would compare to existing technologies?
Well, existing technology is primarily based on fossil fuels, and if you look at our GDP in the U.S., it's about $14 trillion. And we use about 3.4 terawatts of power. So if you simply divide those by one another, you end up showing that you need about $4 per watt year before you spend all of our money on fuel. And that turns out to be approximately $130 per gigajoule. A gigajoule is a common unit of energy, which is the joule. Mm-hmm. And so you have 10 to the ninth gigajoules for $130. History has shown that you can spend at most about 10% of your GDP on energy before you go broke, and that turns out to be about $10 to $13 per gigajoule, and that's approximately equal to about gasoline at a buck a gallon or so. So if we're above a dollar a gallon, we start to weigh into our economic well-being, and societies need a certain amount of cash to prosper. So really, you're competing against $10 a gigajoule fossil fuels. Currently, the solar industry can't make anything cost-effectively. Agriculture, which makes solar energy into food, does work economically. And if you look at wheat and corn and rice, those things are about twice the cost on a gigajoule basis as gasoline. So they're about $20 or so a gigajoule. Mm. Agriculture works because you don't have to spend very much for the land. It holds its value pretty well. And you can produce these energy crops that we eat inexpensively enough. Mm-hmm. The real challenge with any kind of solar energy conversion, whether it be photovoltaic or what we're doing with artificial photosynthesis, is to do something on the same cost as you do with plants and crops. And that's where the real challenge comes, because it ends up being that you have about less than $100 per meter squared that you can spend on your system. Mm-hmm. And so the system cost has to be under $100 per meter squared. And you can't think of very many things you can buy for less than $100 a meter squared, especially things that would be electrically contiguous and they would last for a while and they wouldn't require much upkeep. So it's a very, very tough challenge. You know, farmers do it, and they do it profitably. So we know there's a way to make this happen. Whether you can do that with electronic devices, that remains to be seen. We're about a factor of 10 too high in today's solar cells, even if they were costing almost nothing to maintain and run over the period of their 10-year lifetime or so. So it's a very, very tough challenge to be able to do this cost effectively. The goals of the hub are to develop a system that can point industry in the right way. We're not only solving the scientific challenges of the efficient absorption of the light, the transfer of charges to the chemical centers where we make the fuels, but also then to build an entire device in a manufacturable way that can point to a means by which you could make these things cost effective. It's a very, very tough challenge to do this.
If you if you're out there and you've just purchased some solar panels for your house, or you're in the market, you're gonna look into doing that. Should you just stop right now and wait for this technology to come out, or what do you say?
Well, you're partially getting your costs subsidized today. We have tax breaks and we have incentives to have people buy solar panels. So with all those incentives, one can imagine doing it in a semi-cost-effective way as an individual. For society, though, this is not going to work. We can't subsidize everybody. And the idea is that if we have more of them out in the marketplace, the cost of manufacturing and so forth will come down. And they have. They're able to produce cells at below $1 a watt. The problem is that you can't install them and maintain them for free. We're almost at the point now where the cost of the solar cell itself is almost irrelevant, but you have to install, if you've ever installed a window, the window glass isn't very expensive, but installing it, keeping it clean, doing all those other things that you have to do on something that's, you know, many, many, many acres in size is very expensive.
How would the new technology work to minimize the upkeep that it would end up costing so much, just like solar panels?
Well, people are pretty imaginative, and if you've seen what people have done with self-cleaning windows, for example, mm-hmm. where you can have windows clean themselves, remove the dust particles by photo-oxidizing off the organics, there are innovations in technology to hopefully lower the cost of maintaining these things once they're in place. Nonetheless, it's not going to be free no matter what you do. And when there's a dust storm in the middle of the desert, even if this is where they're placed, it's going to cost money to take the dust off. And all of those costs will end up being important. And these things are going to be enormous in scale in order to produce any significant amount of power. And the upkeep on these is yet to be seen how that will play out.
So in fact, about the scale of these objects, and you were talking about industry lending a hand and manufacturing them on a larger scale, what kind of size are we actually talking about? I mean, if we can physically or visually imagine it.
Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. One thing about sunlight is that it's very diffusely illuminating the Earth, even though it is free and it's abundant, it's also fairly low energy. That's why we can walk out to the beach and not be fried to a crisp. So we're getting about 200 watts per meter squared on average over the year in most places that are sun exposed. And if you take a 10% cell, that's only 20 watts per meter squared on average over the year. So just to drive a hairdryer at 1,000 watts takes a lot of meters squared of area. So the areas are on the order of, say, 600 kilometers by 600 kilometers to supply the U.S. Energy demands. And these are enormous areas.
One more question then. I mean, somehow we haven't talked about this, even bringing up solar panels. But the sun's energy being dispersed, is this a technology that is, at least for us in the sense, local to places like California, or is it a technology that can be deployed regardless of actual intensity or duration of sunlight?
Well, the cost in some ways will scale with where you put it. If you have a lot of light, you'll get more energy output for the same amount of capital input. And so there are niches where even in the northern hemispheres you can use solar energy cost effectively in niche applications. But for large-scale power production to produce terawatt levels of energy, this is much more difficult. So it's likely that the first deployments will be in the sun-exposed southern states, and later, if it works cost-effectively, it would be deployed in a wider area.
During the break, off mic, we were talking a little bit about some of the potential ways the new technology could be put into place, and you had mentioned the pipelines, the infrastructure that's already in place that could be utilized in order to save millions of dollars, if not billions. Can you talk a little bit more about how you would potentially use existing structures in order to roll this potential new technology out?
One of the things that's really important about any solar technology is that the sun shines periodically every day, not all day long. And we use energy, sometimes it's out of sync with the sun. So storage has always been an issue. With artificial photosynthesis, you're making a chemical energy form, which is in some ways storable directly. Hydrogen, if it's your desired product, is very difficult to store and transport. It's expensive and adds cost. One thing that you might do is convert that hydrogen into methane by reacting it with carbon dioxide and then put that methane into the pipeline. The U.S. has an enormous natural gas pipeline system with huge energy capacities, and storing the fuel there to allow it to be used at any place that's connected to a pipeline is one way of storing and transporting that hydrogen that would be made photosynthetically. Alternatively, you can make methane in principle from carbon dioxide directly in a artificial photosynthetic system.
So I wanted to ask also, it's a 5-year project, so after these 5 years, what ends up happening? Is there a plan that's in place to go forward from there and take it to industry, or does it just end and hopefully someone picks up the pieces? How does that end up working?
Our plan is to have an enormous amount of accomplishment in 5 years. There is probably no chance that in 5 years we will have a cost-effective artificial photosynthetic system developed. That's probably impossible. What our aim is to have advances that are encouraging enough to generate additional funding for the center. All of the participants from Stanford, Berkeley, UCSB, and so forth will all be writing proposals and bringing in more money to the center based on its successes to continue the efforts into the future. I think that we're hoping, if we're able to make significant advances over what we have today, that the government and other agencies will see value in continuing that.
There's quotes out, I don't have them in front of me, but both Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein have been singing the praises of this new project, especially coming to California. But I'm pretty sure there's plenty of people out there that have heard new technologies coming along that would rival take away from oil companies, big oil, and they go, you know what, this sounds all great, but the oil companies will win out in the end, and this is just a show. This isn't a real push. Do you have anything for skeptics out there about the real intent and potential of this research?
Well, I first of all want to make a clarification on the oil companies. The oil companies make a very small margin on their profit. I mean, oil is very, very easy to refine and produce gasoline and the products that we consume every day to make society possible. You know, our prosperity today is because oil was produced and refined at such a low cost. We all enjoy that. We all drove our cars to work today. And oil companies, you know, take a relatively small margin off of that to make money. The oil companies winning out is not really what the issue is. The oil will get more and more expensive as oil is depleted, and it will ultimately become too expensive to use anymore. So at the end of the day, the world must accept the fact that they will need to replace fossil fuels with something else. The question is when. It probably is quite a distance in the future. What we've done, unfortunately, is we've left your generation with a dilemma. You know, how much money do you want to spend now for something that probably won't be vital to your survival for another generation or so? We have a lot of coal. Ultimately, the only answer that's sustainable is nuclear-related energy, and solar energy is a nuclear-derived energy source. It's just that we don't connect wires to the sun. We let the photons come from the sun to us. And so we have really one choice for the distant future, which is a nuclear power-based society, solar energy being one of the two options for making use of nuclear energy. And so it's not ultimately a question of if the oil companies will win out. It's whether or not society wants to invest today and spend a premium price for energy. We've seen from the complaints of taxpayers when people try to raise gasoline taxes that they aren't willing to sustain those sorts of economic hardships to develop new energies. And thus, we don't have legislation to help incentivize people to do new renewable technology development.
Is there a place that our listeners could go to check out online some of the work that's being done?
Well, there's unfortunately in the renewable space, there's an enormous amount of good and bad and indifferent information out there. The JCAP, which is the Joint Center for Artificial Photosynthesis, has a website. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but if you Google JCAP, you'll get a hit, and you can look there. That's will describe our efforts. I think there's a multitude of other efforts, and the National Renewable Energy Lab in Boulder has a variety of links to all sorts of things that are going on in this space.
So that was JCAP. You can Google that, or the National Renewable Energy Lab. Correct?
That's right.
Okay.
If you're just joining us, we've been in studio talking to Dr. Eric McFarland, professor at UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemical Engineering, discussing the Department of Energy's artificial photosynthesis project. Dr. McFarland, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Chuck from Freelance Wales, and you are listening to Radio Causeway with Bob and Tim on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
If you've just tuned in, you've reached the end of our show.
Wah, wah.
I can actually do that. Let's see. There. But fret not, you can catch the podcast that we did with Dr. Eric McFarland, professor at the UC Santa Barbara's Department of Chemical Engineering, talking about his role in the ambitious $122 million Department of Energy's Artificial Photosynthesis Project. You can find that at radiocausway.org. You can find links to that, kcsb.org, and you can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes.
Yep. And hopefully you'll join us next week, when we will be joined by Professor Fimmerton in studio. She is the director of the English Broadside Ballad Archive and a professor in English. And this is a pretty exciting project, so check us out next week. Until then, we'll be thinking of you.
Have a great week, everybody.
Radio Causeway is a presentation of KCSB Public Affairs. The opinions expressed were those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KCSB, the associated students, or the regents of the University of California.
If you have a comment or wish to respond, please address correspondence to KCSB, University Center, Room 3185A, University of California, Santa Barbara, California, 93106. This is KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.